Why is Peter O'Mahony good captain material? What made Warren Gatland drop three of his favourite sons? And Bossy and Fez talk about the best coffee shops in Auckland. It's all coming up on The Hard Yards.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes. Passionate about sport.
And Ringrose comes through. Oh. That is brilliant from Ringrose. Ringrose is going here. What a score.
I know what website you use most often, but it's a sister of YouTube.
Hi Rob, Zeebs here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next year.
He's calling.
I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
I say YouTube is probably YouTube.
You're listening to the Hard Yards Rugby Podcast on Sports Joe. I'm Andy McGeady. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Kev McLaughlin, Isaac Bass and Pat McCarry are in studio with me, and we'll have Stephen Ferris on the phone from New Zealand, as well as odds for the first Lions test from Hayley O'Connor from Ladbrokes. Just to remind everyone of Warren Gatland's 23 for the first Lions test. It's Liam Williams, Anthony Watson, Jonathan Davies, Ben Teo, Elliot Daly, Owen Farrell, Connor Murray, Mako Vunipola, Jamie George, Tyke Furlong, Alan Wynne-Jones, George Cruz, Peter O'Mahony, captain, Sean O'Brien, Toby Faletau. The subs, Ken Owens, Jack McGrath, Kyle Sinclair, Mario Toje, Sam Warburton, Rhys Webb, Jonathan Sexton and Lee Halfpenny. Fez, you're on the ground taking it all in from a coffee shop in Auckland.
I am. Can you not hear the music in the background and the coffee beans been put into the machine? And
you just asked him to turn down
going,
the bass.
No, you can't hear that in the background.
Turn down the bass, lads, please. How is life over there in the land of the long white cloud? Is it
personally or for for the Lions?
Let's go with personally first, and then we'll get to rugby later on.
Personally, things are good. I arrived in on Monday morning. Jet lag to the absolute balls, so I had to go out and have a couple of pints, as you do. Bossy will know the best way to get over jet lag is to go out and have a few drinks, so that's what I've done, and just taking in the sights of Auckland, had a dander about. Actually been quite busy, doing quite a bit of work, which I didn't really expect when I signed up for this, but that's the way it goes. So yeah, just taking in the sights, meeting a couple of boys tonight. Michael Corcoran, who Pat may know pretty well. And so I meet a couple of boys for dinner later on tonight. So a couple of quiet beers and then get an early night and look forward to the first test this Saturday, which is it's really, really is starting to bubble because all the Lions supporters are just starting to come in. You know, I couldn't believe how empty. I was in Auckland since Monday and there was hardly anybody about. Went down to Hamilton and I come back after the game on Tuesday night from Hamilton, there's still nobody about, and then bingo, the Lions supporters are coming in droves and their thousands, so the atmosphere is really starting to build towards the weekend.
So Bossy, when poor Fez isn't having to work for a living, where should he be going in Auckland?
Jeez, well I imagine you're probably staying somewhere near the Sky City, are you, Fez? So I wouldn't be surprised, as a bit of a venture junkie, you'd probably be jumping off the Sky Tower there at one stage and probably across to Waiheke Island to see a few of the vineyards, I imagine, as well, Ferris. So there's plenty of options there for you, aren't there?
I actually went across to Takapuna today. There's a really nice cafe there.
Yeah,
lunch. So I'm too old for that stuff.
I was going to say, that's definitely the coffee culture going across, if you're going across to Takapuna just to sit there and be seen in the cafe.
Three or four Instagram posts from the cafe just to make sure everyone knows you're there.
Everybody tagged in it. Comparing likes.
Both boys liked it. Okay.
Okay, so now we've got over Fez's personal time and, you know, his horror at having to work. We do have a Lions test to talk about. Mm-hmm. And we've got Peter O'Mahony, Lions captain. That is serious news. It's an incredible story. When we actually step back from this, you know, after the tour is gone, we'll look back and the book will be written and you're going, where did this come from? Kev, it is an amazing story.
It's an amazing story. Peter Manny captained myself and Isaac actually for the Irish tour to US and Canada back in 2012. I think he was only 23 at the time, and obviously there's a lot of older guys, there are granddads like Bossy on the tour in his mid to late 30s at that point, you know. And for someone like Pete to come in, as you know, he'd only played for Munster a couple of years at that stage, and captain an Irish team on tour, I was very impressed with the way he stood up. And just took it in his stride. He's quite a serious guy. He wouldn't be like a huge talker, like played under captains like Geno in the past, that, you know, you'd hear their voice from start to finish of the game, and that's his style. And then other captains like Leo, who would be quite quiet and considered in what he says. And Pete would be more in the Leo mold, quite a serious guy. And when he speaks, people listen. And, you know, he leads in terms of his actions and what he does on the pitch. You know, it's incredibly impressive, because when Gatland went on this tour, he did not even have Pete in his mind as a potential test captain. He had Sam Warburton there, then he had his backup of Alan Wynne-Jones. And Alan Wynne-Jones is on the pitch at the weekend, and he's captained a successful Lions test team. And to get Pete in there ahead of him and keep Warburton on the bench, it just says a huge amount about the impact he must have had on tour. What's really interesting, sorry to cut across you, what's really interesting is like his actual numbers and stats in the games haven't been enormous. Like, made, you know, three carries and one tackle against the Maoris, and, you know, but the thing is, he's doing a lot of the grunt work and the unseen work, and he's freeing up Faletau and Sean O'Brien. I think that's a great balance. But for me, I think he needs a barnstorming game against the All Blacks at the weekend. And I think he needs a couple of big carries, a couple of big tackles, and he needs to lead from the front in that way, and he needs to step up his game, and he'll know that. And the impact he's had is phenomenal, but this is huge pressure, and this is a different level, and, you know, it's just amazing to have another Irish Lions captain.
Yeah, Fez, what's the reaction over there like?
Yeah, it's funny, the reaction over here, because it's almost, you know, Pete came in to the Irish squad when Jimmy Heaslip picked up an injury, got a man of the match performance, then everybody was talking about him, then he got on the Lions tour, then he's now captain of the Lions. You know, some of the Kiwi press over here actually think that he's got lucky because of the way things have fallen, but for me, you make your own luck. And, you know, Pete had to go out and prove himself in that game against England, and he did that. He was absolutely, you know, phenomenal, one man on the match, and really threw his name into the hat to be selected for the Lions. And the way he's went about it, you know, he's not the type of person that goes on the social media or goes into you know, in the press conferences and says this, that, and the other. He just goes about his business. I think he's a really, really well-respected guy. And when you have somebody who's really well-respected, like most captains are in the modern-day game, you know, it goes a long way. So he's not only a good player, but he's a good leader and a good captain. But I definitely agree with Kev. You know, I really think he has to have a big game. Yes, he has been good, and he's a leader, and he's been leading from the front, but he has to have a huge game. You know, somebody like CJ Stander having 20, 25 carries a game. I know he's probably not making huge meters with those carries, but I really think Pete is going to stand up on Saturday and say, right, I'm leading the Lions, I got to lead by example on the pitch, and here we go, because he's definitely got the ability to do it.
What's he like to play against, Fez?
I've only played against him once or twice, I think. Not too many times. To be honest, I played with him in his first cap. He played against Italy. And I was playing, he played seven that day. Look, I think with Pete, he knows he's not the fastest back row on the pitch. He knows he's not the most explosive back row on the pitch. He knows he's not the biggest hitter in the, you know, in the back row on the pitch. But he's an all-rounder. He does everything very well. And he's a good man to have in there. I think just his line-out ability, you know, he is like Kev. He's very, very good defensively, and you know, wins a lot of balls for the team. So I think that's another reason why he's in there. But he's just a bloody nightmare to play against. You look at his performances over the last couple of years, he's just a hard man who is very, very passionate about playing rugby. Anytime there's a turnover with the Lions, he's running in and he's grabbing boys and he's, you know, patting lads in the back, and it just means so much to him. I think I made a comment this week that there's only one person that I know that hates losing more than Peter O'Malley, and that was Paul O'Connell, and they're both cut from the same cloth. Pete O'Mahony took the captaincy off Paul O'Connell, and I just think that the Pete has got all those great attributes from Paul O'Connell over the years, and that's what makes him such a good player.
Yeah, one of the things, just to add to that, what Fez is saying, that makes it a good balance of a back row is that Shawnee and Faletau are going to carry every time, but in the last two games Pete's played, his distribution has actually been really excellent. He's sucked players in, he's passed the ball on, and it just adds another element to the back row. He's been really good at that element of his game. I think he made 5 passes at the weekend, which is unheard of for a back row in wet conditions, which is great.
And like Bossy, Sean O'Brien, that we're just talking about now, he's starting again ahead of Warburton, because Warburton could have been picked at either 7 or 6, never mind the captaincy in this game, and another Irish back rower in ahead of him. So
yeah, quite rightly too. I think Shawnee's probably been one of the players of the tour so far, and without him there, they've probably been a little bit down on sort of a little bit of impact maybe, or a little bit of X factor in the back row. But what I would say is, there was a bit of pressure on Shawnee coming into it, and he was carrying a little bit of injury and stuff, and he stepped up. They complemented each other well. Warburton, for me, is struggled the whole way through. A guy I actually thought might be unlucky not to be on the bench was Tipperick, because he adds something a little bit different that might actually suit the game against the All Blacks, because it breaks up a little bit. And like you said, Warburton coming off the bench will be interesting.
I think Justin Tipperick's carrying a bit of a knock, Bossy.
Is he?
He hyperextended his knee in the last game, yeah. So he's carrying a knock. So I think that's why he's not in the reckoning. But like, yeah, last Kev, who would you rather have in your team beside you? Would you rather have Sam Warburton, or would you rather have Shawnee O'Brien? And you pick Shawnee O'Brien every single time. So, I would have Sean there, and it doesn't matter if he's the tour captain. Sean is the better player, and that's the bottom line.
And there's no doubt about it. And looking at the end of Leinster's season, they missed him so badly. And it's not due to a lack of talent. Like, when you look at like Levy and Van der Flaar, like, they're awesome players. But Shawnee brings the X factor, and he does things that lift teams. He makes those line breaks, he gets those turnovers at the critical time. He has that world-class ability. And he's actually one of the few Lions players that New Zealand are actually scared of.
I mean, Warburton is a brilliant turnover guy, and around that area of the team, but he does not bring what you just mentioned, which is that big line bust.
No, but Shawnee's got the turnover ability as well. Yeah. We've been talking about this for weeks, like Warburton versus O'Brien, and like, Warburton will get you turnover, but you need more than that against the Lions.
Yeah, so. And I think you're right there.
Against New Zealand.
people forget about, they see Shawnee and they see what he's doing around the pitch, but Shawnee's making the tackle, getting up, stealing the ball. He's doing absolutely everything, He's not just a one-trick pony. So, and he's disruptive in there. He's got that fair factor. Guys will be actually looking at him, thinking we need to contain him. And when they're concentrating on him a bit more, that's going to open it up for the likes of Faletau and guys in the backs.
You did it in that the Maoris game where he was involved in that little dust up, but bigger on the ground, and you could hear O'Brien, because he's always chirping away in the pitch, isn't he? Sorry,
because he's got such a high pitch voice. Yeah, you can always hear him.
But then he got up.
Hey, cheap shot, sir.
He got up a couple of minutes later, and then the very next play, they had the scrum, and he made the turnover. Like, held your man up, and it was a big moment, and you could see all the boys patting him on the back as well.
Pat, I didn't realise that you were there. I thought you were away home.
I'm still bitter about it.
Rub it in, Fez.
First time I've heard you speak.
So, and the one name we aren't talking about is any controversy whatsoever. There is no debate. Tyke Furlong, starting line. I mean, it is, again, there's another story. A couple of years ago, would you have said that he is the undisputed starter in a Lions test team? I don't think anyone would have put their hand up and said that, but it's here. I mean, it's remarkable.
Yeah, it's an amazing story, and I think we spoke about it a little bit a couple of weeks ago, where we said that if Marty Moore hadn't gone to Wasps, would he be here today? Probably not, because Marty was ahead of him in Leinster, and Rossi was ahead of him, and then Marty went away, he got his chance, and he just took it.
Yeah.
Like, he hasn't looked back since, and I think he brings something different, like, to what any Irish tight has done for a long time from a dynamic standpoint, and like the amount of carries and tackles he makes. He's like having an extra back row around the pitch. It's a huge test from at the weekend though, because Joe Moody, he got the right side of the decisions against Crusaders, but ultimately Joe Moody did look like he was out muscling him in the scrums in the Crusaders game, and I guarantee you they're going to target him. Joe Moody and Cody Taylor are going to do a pincer on Tyke Furlong and try and disrupt him and put him under huge pressure. And it's probably the biggest test of his life now to go into this game and actually hold parity.
Yeah, and you're probably right there as well, Kev, because I think he's the odd one out in that front row. It's quite easily it's a dark art up there, and you like to keep the guys that know each other in there together. So having a couple of Englishmen and the Irish guy in there sort of disrupts it a little bit. The it's a Crusaders front row basically for the All Blacks. The Crusaders not a full strength front row, did well a little while ago, a couple of weeks ago. So they will be up against it. So it'll be interesting dynamic to see how that unfolds. Tig for me just is. His work right around the pitch is that's what gets him. It's just unbelievable.
Dan Cole possibly would be the safer bet from a scrummaging point of view, but I'm glad right across the park Gatland's gone for the calls that need to be made to beat the All Blacks. Going for Williams at fullback, he's saying we need tries to win this game, and I'm really delighted he's taken a couple of
it's
risks.
It's exciting, isn't it, that team? You expected a certain team to be named, and you saw that last night, and you were like, oh, hold on. At least it got you a bit more revved up for this game. The fact that these lads could actually come in daily during the week and have a great game and get rewarded.
We should ask Hayley what the odds are going to be on North and Halfpenny getting dropped for the first test.
We'll come back to the back three in a second. But Fez, you were talking to Johnny before the Chiefs game. Are you surprised that he hasn't made the cut?
No, I'm not surprised because Owen Farrell has been outstanding. I was at the European final and he ran the show against Claremont. He's just an exceptional talent. I think defensively he's very strong. Obviously he plays a lot of rugby at 12. But no, I wasn't shocked. And I actually met Shawnee O'Brien for lunch yesterday in Auckland. We went for a bit of grub, and Shawnee said to me, he's like, with Warren Gatland, you just don't know what he's going to throw at you. So Shawnee was a wee bit apprehensive of his position. He just didn't know if he was going to be selected, and I think everybody was kept on their toes. And Shawnee kind of came across to me as if Gatland would probably throw in a couple of curveballs somewhere, and lo and behold, the team's announced and those curveballs are in there. One of them's possibly Johnny Sexton not being involved, but for me, I think with him being rested a week ago, apparently carrying a knock, all the New Zealand media over here are saying that that was made up and he was just being rested. I think he would have probably liked a bit of game time before getting into the first test against the best team in the world in their own backyard. But they haven't lost since 1994. But for me, I think Owen Farrell is just playing the better rugby. I know Johnny's starting to come good, but you look at that semi-final against the Scarlets and he hasn't played much rugby again this year. But speaking to him, he's confident, he's in a good place, he's enjoying himself out here. Obviously he's missing home a little bit with his young family, but that's to be expected. But he's just eager to contribute to the team, and if that means coming off the bench on Saturday and slotting a drop goal to win it for the Lions, then he is definitely the man to do that.
Bossy, Farrell over Sexton?
Yeah, to be honest, I agree. Although, good mates with Johnny, and it's tough to say, I think Owen really deserves his spot there. And to be honest, I think he's very key to the Lions' chances of success. He has caused them a lot of trouble, and I know they're very fearful of him. But it also adds an extra impact off the bench, because when Johnny does come on, I don't think Owen Farrell will be coming off. They'll be shifting him out, and that just creates, to be honest, it's good for Johnny because it takes the pressure off him. He's always been, and he likes that pressure, but it's always been a lot of pressure on him to solve things and change things and to win games and stuff like this, whereas you saw how they connected earlier on in the tour. I think they're by the end of the test series they could be starting together. It's just that they haven't had a lot of time together, and that's lets Johnny just sort of probably play his own game and maybe enjoy it a bit more. It's good to hear Ferris saying that he's enjoying it out there, because inevitably when boys are enjoying it, that's when they're going to be class. So I know that when he comes on, he'll definitely make a lot of difference.
Now, time to talk about the back three calls, because if you talk about a call here or there, two of this back three, you would have thought once they're on the plane, they are starting for Gatland, Halfmoney and North. Neither of them are starting, and instead it's two guys who seem to have played their way in just from form, Liam Williams and Elliot Daly. Nobody called this one that.
No. I would have even thought Williams maybe had a chance, but as a left winger or something like that, I thought he might have went there because North just wasn't good last weekend at all. So I thought Williams might have had a chance, but not as fullback, and then didn't see Halfpenny. I thought the minute Hogg got injured, Halfpenny was just locked in, just wearing the jersey.
Hogg injured plus Farrell having a quad strain. I was going, and once you got the Farrell news, I was going, there's no way Lee Halfpenny is not starting the first test and kicking.
Yeah, as Kev said earlier, there's still plenty of kickers there, Johnny as well, great kicker. Elliot Daly can kick. Williams can kick. Yeah, but for me, like, I don't think North and Halfpenny have really deserved their spots. I think we've all, no one sort of guessed that Gatland would drop two of his favourite sons, and I think that's really been the spur in it, that he's actually done them both at the same time. But
well, along with Warburton,
yeah, exactly.
That's three favourite sons. And he's only room for Alan Wynn.
Imagine the Welsh podcast this morning, just tables being banged. Like, you know,
and Alan Wynn's probably lucky to be in there as well. Yeah, I know, but like, I think it's the right call. And those guys, they've been on form. Elliot Daly is dangerous. He's got that X factor, and as you can see against the Chiefs, Williams, two of the tries directly later in the game came from his breaks and set them up, which is key for that little bit of variation. Whereas
I'm a huge fan of Daly. I think it's an all round footballer. I just think he's fantastic. He's an intelligent player. He's got acceleration. He's got the boot, obviously, but he can kick intelligently. It's not just a siege gun.
Yeah.
But it is. There's another side of this, which is the George North is the guy who, if he's on, he can score from anywhere in the field. And Gatland, it's a brave call.
It is, but you look at, say, what happened against the Blues, where Lyons actually got done for pace on several occasions, and he, like, Gatland's gone for our two fastest wingers in the squad here, Daly and Watson.
Yeah.
And when you're playing against someone like Ione, maybe you need to do that. And yeah, I just think it's a smart call. I hope it pays off. It's slightly more high risk. I think, like, Liam Williams can be amazing and have the X factor, but, like, he got a yellow card and he can do Liam Williams. Let's just say a little bit reckless at times. Yeah. The scaffolder can be so,
and that's probably the thing. I think Watson may be a little bit vulnerable. Like, George North has been vulnerable on the wing, and I think Watson could be vulnerable, especially against Ioane. And maybe I thought Williams might have been there just to solely to disrupt him. So I think, you know, Liam Williams would be great at fullback to cover that. But yeah,
so we'll skip onto the bench for a second. Fez, Warburton as an impact player off the bench, how does that sit with you?
Fez going up to get another latte, I think.
Yeah,
but just one thing we didn't talk about at all was the centres. So, like, I think, like, one of the most crucial battles of the day is Tio against Sonny Bill, because if Tio can stop Sonny Bill from getting those offloads, it's going to have a massive impact. Like, the thing with Tio is he hits quite high. He's a rugby league player. He's recently learned how to wrap his arms as well, which is great. But, like, if he gets through the entire game stopping Sonny Bill from getting an offload, he's had an incredible game.
Like, moving on to the backs and the bench.
Yeah, the Lee Halfpenny call now. If he's not starting this game, why is he on the bench?
Yeah, I totally agree, and I don't really understand it, especially if you look at the makeup of the back three at the minute, and we're just talking about how good it is having having Daly and Williams both there. But the reality is they both just played almost 80 minutes of rugby on Tuesday, and now they're going straight into a test match 4 days later. So you can't expect both of them to be in their prime at the end of the match. And when you've got Halfpenny, he's obviously going to be coming on. Which one's he going to take cover for? You know, obviously, is it Williams, or will Williams go to the wing? Bit of element of fatigue against an All Blacks team that's, you know, dangerous at that time of the game. So that's what I don't really understand, and sort of some aspect of Gatland's selection, which I think will be very crucial in the outcome of the match.
Yeah, I mean, I could see more in terms of the shape of the 23. You could see more logic in having someone like a Jonathan Joseph there, or, you know, because there's a lot of versatility in the team as it is. They could shift around. You could see logic in, I mean, Jack Noel, even if you want a game breaker, that's someone who can give you that, and then shift other people around. But I don't know, I'm not seeing it. But Reece Webb now can give you that impact.
Yeah, and I, to be honest, you know, kind of really deserves a spot in there, but if you're looking for something to change it up, Reece Webb has just been dynamic. You know, he hasn't done the little things well that you need from a scrum half, the crucial bits. He makes those little bit of errors and stuff like that, but his running game is absolutely dynamic at the minute, and he's caused the All Blacks a bit of trouble when he's been on the pitch. So I know they'll be wary of him when he comes on, and it can, again, just it totally changes up the game to a different dynamic when he gets on.
Yeah, Webb has genuine pace.
Yeah, he does. I'd be surprised to see Connor not play 80 minutes. So he's been, like, I think he's been the Lions' best player so far on the tour. He barely made a mistake. His kicking game has been incredible. And if it's due to be raining, he'll stick up about three or four high balls on Dag early in the game. He'll make him feel uncomfortable, put pressure on him, and that's the way they're going to win the game, is like high balls, set piece, particularly if it's raining for a couple of days leading into the game.
There was one Kiwi journalist described it as Conor Murray's box kicks as Groundhog Day without the laughs. So, like, and he'll just pump it up there again, and it's amazing how people talk about it, but how accurate it is that someone arrives within a split second of that ball landing in someone's.
How hard a skill is a bossy, that, like, his level of box kicking, like.
Yeah, it's to be honest, and that's probably something we've always done as nines in Ireland, is you know, we've put a lot of emphasis on our kick chase game and stuff like that, and you know, rather kicking it a bit short. But he's got great leverage, he gets extra height on it than most nines would, you know, and things like that. So look, it's years of honed skill. It's similar to what Joe would have ingrained in his nines, you know, from an early start, and the pressure that you'd be putting on them at training, you know. So like it's a key factor, and definitely I think if the first one goes astray, then it's all on, you know. They take the first couple, defuse the bombs, to for want of a better phrase, you know, do that once or twice, then obviously they've got to try and think of something else. Mm. But he's got the running game as well. Mm. Yeah,
so cool. Next we move on to the New Zealand team. We'll be discussing this without Stephen Ferris, who's probably off updating his Instagram feed. But thank you very much, Ferris, for dialing in. We'll run through the New Zealand team, I think. So Ben Smith, fullback, Israel Dagg, Crotty's back in, Sonny Bill Williams, Ione's in, which is an interesting one, Bowden Barrett, Aaron Smith, John Moody, Taylor Franks, Brody Retallick, Sam Whitelock, Kano Kane, and Kieran Reid back in. Bossy, Crotty and Reid back in.
Yeah, Kieran Reid, obviously, I wasn't sure if he was going to make it as well. You know, I don't know how injured he was and things like that, whether they'll just keep it under wraps, but I think he is very key. He's similar to like we're talking about Shawnee and those type of guys don't need to play a lot of rugby. He'll just roll in and lead from the front, and to be honest, he does everything out there as well, you know. And in terms of Crotty, he's probably more of a surprise for me. Mm. Hasn't had a lot of rugby, came back in and then got a slight injury again, and then Leonard Brown actually played very well last weekend, so I thought I've been watching him come through for a little while now, and thought, you know, he teamed up well with Sonny Bill, that they might partner in the centres. Both of them haven't played with Sonny Bill a lot. Sonny Bill hasn't been playing a lot of rugby. He's been on form, mind you. I think Crotty and himself have only played two or three times together. So that'll be interesting just to see that dynamic, which is a bit strange for an All Black midfield when you've got some, maybe a partnership as inexperienced as that.
And Kev, on the wings, there's no Sevilla and no Nadolo.
Yeah, it's crazy to think someone like Sevilla can be left out of your 23.
Yeah.
But Ione has just been so good, and I think based on the havoc he caused for the Blues against the Lions, I think it's the right call to pick him. But he won't get around Anthony Watson as easily as he did against Jack Knowles, so I think that'll be an interesting matchup in terms of raw pace on pace, because both of them are, like, they're not the most solid wingers in the world, but they can both like set a pitch alight, so it's going to be a really interesting battle.
Yeah, and with that, with Sevilla, I think it was shaping up like they were going to start him, and I thought it would be quite surprised, actually, because even I know, and there's been a lot of made of Ireland beating the All Blacks, and one thing I would say is, from the New Zealand point of view, Sevilla probably almost solely lost it to an extent, you know, so he's very vulnerable out there, especially if it's obviously going to be a lot of high ball, could be a bit wet. He's not the player that I think he used to be in terms of, he's only young, you know, just going through that phase. But if you're going on form, my own, he has to be there. He's absolutely brilliant for a 20-year-old when they played the Blues, and he's manhandling guys, you know. So the strength of this kid is unbelievable.
And Aaron Smith gets the call to start at nine. I mean, he's certainly, you're up there with Murray as the best nines in the world. Talk us through Aaron Smith's game.
Yeah, Aaron Smith, he's probably been the last year and a bit, he's been out of form, I'd say, and I actually thought, I've always rated him a lot more than Perenara, and this is probably the first time I thought TJ should be starting. He's worked on his game, really ironed out the little mistakes he used to make under pressure. I guess it comes with a little bit more maturity and a little bit more experience. But yeah, Aaron, what he'll bring is, to be honest, he's just his option taking is pretty much on point the whole time. He's got the fastest and probably longest passing game from any nines around at the minute. His box kicking as well, we make a lot of Connor's box kicking. I think Aaron Smith's very underrated on his box kicks. And also, he just picks the right time to make a run. He's probably, to be honest, he's one of the fittest nines around as well, which adds to the tempo of the All Blacks game. And I think that's probably where they're looking at key, you know, just to get there, get it gone, shift the pack around for the Lions, because they're a noticeably a lot bigger pack than the All Blacks.
His pass is freakish. And, like, is that accuracy or is it speed? Or, like, what does he... Because when he whips the ball across, like, he whips it 20 metres with a flick of the wrist, like, and it's actually just incredible.
Yeah, and it's his accuracy as well, you know. You really see him throw a bad pass. And it's combined with a lot of things, Kev. It's not just how quick it is. He's there so quick. Yeah. So just, he looks like he's got so much time the whole time. His running game, he can... Even when he takes a step or two, you don't really realise because he's sort of dragging in a defender and then it's gone like that. So those are it's just little subtleties that I think, like you said, when you've got guys like Owani, Sonny Bill, Barrett, Smith, you know what I mean? That's you're just throwing it. You got all those weapons out there to an extent that you don't have to. You just get it out to them as quick as you can.
And in the centre, we touched on this earlier on, but Benteo and Sonny Bill, bit of history, Pat.
Yeah, there's. I was reading up there recently, and Israel Folau was Benteo's old flatmate over in Australia, and they played together for the Rabbitohs. And it's only 3 years ago that Williams came across Teo in a rugby league game. I think he was playing for the Roosters, and it was I was almost going to say a typical Benteo hit, like a kind of shoulder on Williams' chest as he got a pass away. And I think Kev, you were saying he was called up for it, wasn't he?
He was put on report for it.
So they do have that bit of history there. Like the Aussies were going nuts about it at the time, and so it was being built up for a while that this could be the guy to stop him. But you could just see Williams, like he doesn't have much game time, as we said earlier on the season. But he came in against the Lions and just tore them to shreds. Like, so he's not going to do it on his own, Teo, but he's the type of guy who's kind of well used to playing against a guy like Williams, and he can see if he's going to go for an offload here, because that offload games was kind of
and he's going to bring that rugby league vibe. Like, you saw him at the weekend, he's mouthing at the opposition and he'll follow Williams around for the entire game. He'll be mouthing at him, he'll be trying to wind him up, and he'll be in his face. And like, I think that's a bit of rugby league culture in him, like, but it's going to be a fascinating battle between the two of them.
Yeah, and it will be interesting, because the times they come head to head probably won't be that often, you know. It'll be Farrell's man to be tackling in defence a lot. And then, you know, the inside outside balls, that's where he'll come in. And I know Teo will be, he relishes these battles, you know. He would like to go head to head with him a bit more if he can't. So that's where it might be, you know, he likes to put the hit in, so he's just got to avoid the temptation of trying to pop out to get that hit on Sonny Bill, because then he'll expose.
And he's an attacking threat as well, like Teo. In his last like 6 months, I remember he really clicked in his last 6 months at Leinster, like, and it was really brilliant for him as Leinster
could have his lines and his ability to keep that ball free, like you know, a mini version of Sonny Bill. It did really shine.
Yeah, like just some great tries that Leinster scored, that he would have been popping out passes at the last minute, and these kind of improbable, you know, passes he's getting away and stuff. So everybody talks about the defence, but let's hope we kind of get to see, because he's had, I think, the most defenders beaten, most line breaks of any line so far, so let's hope he shows that as well.
He's looked very dangerous on attack, straight off line out ball and all that sort of stuff. He's never mind about making the advantage line, he's making half breaks, he's making breaks, he's offloading as well, he's creating space for guys around him. So I think he's crucial in there, in that back line for our go forward ball for the Lions.
So we've said that Captain O'Mahony is the silent captain, but Benteo is not so silent.
He mightn't be encouraging his teammates too much, but he'd be mouthing at the opposition for sure.
is that a good thing when you play with players like that? Is that always a good thing?
It depends on the team and the culture. Like, I like our mantra would have been, you poker face it and you look them in the eye, but you never say anything. Yeah. As in, that's more effective. But like, I think genuinely it's a rugby league thing, and it's maybe a little bit of an Aussie thing, the sledging idea. In cricket, it happens all the time, and you're in their face and you're making them feel uncomfortable. And I mean, if that's what works for him to stop Sonny Bill getting an offload of the weekend, we'll take it. Whatever he needs to do, you know. So,
and it's psychological mind games, you know. Some guys, that's how they get in, that's how they express themselves, and it might put one or two guys off, but you know, some guys come out with like, that guy's a prick, you know. But it's what happens on the field. No one really cares, you know. It's just sort of, if you're trying to get a little bit of an edge over your opponent, and the guys in your own team, sometimes it fires them up, and sometimes it's sort of going, what's this lad at, you know. So it's just all a little bit of noise, you know, and he seems to do it quite well. It's always interesting listening to it. You can see him, it's half the time you don't hear what he's saying in his Aussie accent, but you can just see him chipping away there in the background, you know.
Okay, so Sky Sports, if you're listening, we want the player mic on Ben.
I don't know if you want the player mic. Could be a bit of controversy.
We apologise once again. Right, predictions. I'm going to go around Bossy first.
Jeez, to be honest, I think it'll be tough for the Lions. I think it could be. To be honest, I think the spread earlier from the betting odds,
11 points.
Right. Yeah, 11 points. I think it was. I think that's about right.
Yeah, I like plus 11. I think it's going to be tight. First test in the rain in Auckland. I think the Lions will push them close, but I think New Zealand will squeak it.
Yeah, I like the Lions bench. You know, like McGrath, I told you, Stander all on the bench, Sexton on the bench. Like, if it's tight, I think they've got might have a bit of an advantage there, but still, the All Blacks.
I don't think Stander or Warburton You said Stan.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
So CJ,
yeah,
CJ Warburton, I had CJ.
I like that. That's a good player. Yeah, we like that.
I think you combined the two. Yeah, I think the All Blacks. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're right. But listen, we'll leave it there. Up next, we'll chat about the Razzie Erasmus situation at Munster and Ireland's time in Japan.
Now, when the cups are decided, you have fine weather, but that's probably a 2-month period. You have to do the hard yards.
Hey, that's the name of the show.
Excuse the pun.
No, that's perfect. We're going to use that now.
I'm on a bonus for that, definitely. Yeah. Get that in.
The Hard Yards.
The Hard Yards.
On Sports Joe, backed by Ladbrokes.
Thanks for listening to the podcast today. If you're listening to it for the first time, subscribe on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud, and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. We're going to do a wrap-up of some of the rugby news stories from the last few days. Now, Razzie Erasmus, his future, we thought it was sorted, Pat.
Yeah, we heard it from him, and then, but as I think I mentioned at the time, he said, "I'm staying," but he never said how long he was staying for. Like, so a few couple of months later, he could be going. And yeah, I think it was Keane Tracy in the Irish Independent mentioned it, and they've got pretty good contacts down there. You know, it'd be hard to kind of, they seem pretty confident with it. They've got a bit of a partnership with Munster, so if he was anyway wrong, I'd imagine Munster would have been, you know, given a strong phone call about it. So I'd say it doesn't sound good, but it'd be interesting to see whether he sees out the 6 months or whether he gives him a season, and whether he kind of feels like he owes him a full season.
Yeah, it's not great. I mean, is this one of these situations where there's this 6 month clause is coming back to bite them?
Well, yeah, potentially, you know.
I mean, it happened with Lamb.
And probably there's more reason for it to be happening with Erasmus when you look at it. You know, if South Africa call in his native country and things like that, you know. So
yeah, I mean, you know, don't get us wrong. I mean, if you're going to leave,
yeah,
go for a test directorship job in your own place. Yeah, good luck to him. It's just the communication aspect of it seems to have been less than ideal.
And I think what we're hearing is probably like what's going on in the back room there is, I'd say it'll be a lot more clearer amongst them if it is going to happen. They've got enough like all the other players in the moment, like Nilo, Flannery, Sexton, Felix, they're all just recently signed 2 more years, so I'm sure there's a bit of pre-crisis planning, for want of a better word, that these guys are having a little bit more say. They're sort of trying to divert the roles, who's coming in or who's doing what. So if it is, it's the transition that'll be the tough point, as we were talking about earlier. If he's leaving in 6 months around December, January, that's a tough time for somebody to be leaving a season for the guys in the team.
Yeah, Kev, you mentioned that off air earlier on. Like, you know, if you were looking forward to a coaching transition happen mid-season, that wouldn't be ideal from a player's point of view.
No, and they've just begun to get that level of stability they've been craving, and I think Erasmus brought in a huge amount. And we saw Munster play like they haven't played in a number of years this season. I know they didn't win any silver in the end, but they were right in the mix, and they played some of the best rugby they have in a long time.
Yeah, a final and a semi-final.
Very impressive. Like, and I think from a player's point of view, the right thing to do if Erasmus is planning on leaving in 6 months' time, he should leave now. And allow them to. I would guess that if he is planning on leaving, that Munster are looking for a coach right now,
and then negotiate, you know, how to tie up that 6 months in some way.
Exactly. It's more disruptive for him to coach until, say, Christmas. Think about the Christmas period, and think about like that stage. Your mindset as a player at that stage of the season is like you're playing games, you're playing against Leinster or whatever. Like, you're
actually, they pick under strength teams there anyway. Like.
Yeah. But there's so much going on, and from a player's point of view, you just want stability. You want to know who your coach is, and to have it in your head, September, October, November, like those key games in the season, that someone might be leaving in a few months, or someone is leaving in a few months. It's very, very difficult mentally from a player's point of view. So I would guess that what Munster are going to do is, if he is initiating his clause, that he will leave straight away.
Bossy, do Munster need to come out and say something on this?
Look, to be honest, I don't think they really need to be honest. It's all what's happening in shop is the best. If they're managing it in shop well with the players, the players are out on holiday at the minute, so they'll be hearing rumours maybe and stuff like that.
They're on holiday in New Zealand.
Exactly. Or Japan, or Blumen, or probably across in Portugal somewhere by the looks of Instagram. what I was going to say is it is that tough time, and it's around these holiday times you don't like these rumours happening, because you can't control what's being fed to your players. So once they get back in a week's time or the 10 days' time, that's the first thing that'll be addressed. And I'd say I'd be a little bit different to the school of thought of Kevin if I said if he's activating that 6 month clause from now, then there's a period where they can sort of wean him off and he can
transition him out
rather than just making a cut point straight, because all of a sudden if you cut it straight away, the planning that's been done, it's inherited by the current group of players and coaches, and just puts an inherent pressure on them. Whereas I think he's a professional enough guy and he's an honest enough, enough guy, he can breed through those young coaches, because I think we still can get a bit out of him in terms of what he can give this coaching group. And then,
is there anyone there that could potentially be head coach material, like in terms of the guys he's been bringing through and trying to like foster and grow, like as in, like you say, if that was the plan for a 6 month transition, and his plan over that 6 months was to foster someone to become the new head coach? Because I think that's more effective than bringing in some like it's really, really disruptive bringing in a new coach, new ideas, new everything in the middle of the season versus transitioning someone up. But I'm just trying to think, is there anyone in there?
The natural one would be Paulie, I'd imagine, but whether he's ready for that or wants to accept that type of role, I don't know.
He's involved.
He's involved in there in the academy at the present, you know. So I think that's probably the natural maybe progression rather than somebody like Felix or Fla that's in there at the minute.
That is actually a good thing that Munster do have, because you've got guys like Jones and like Flannery, as you say, who are already there. They're ingrained, they're part of the furniture, they're not moving. So it's not a situation where Razzie lifts up and takes the entire coaching infrastructure with him, which does happen. You know, it does happen in other situations.
It's minimising disruption is key here. So I think, like Bossy says, if you can do a 6 month transition plan and he commits to that, then maybe that's the best answer here.
Yeah, we might ask Kayleigh later on and she got ads on.
So just thinking, sneak January out of him as well to get through the Champions Cup and then Six Nations, off you go. Off you go.
We did mention that there are players off in Japan. The last test wasn't really up to much. 31-3 at half time, Pat?
Yeah. Jack Conan is absolutely destroying people his last two games.
Well, it helps when they don't tackle.
he's been great, and so is Keith Earls. Keith Earls racking up these unbelievable stats in the last couple of games. But I think Schmidt will be kind of like, there's just still, you know, just even from knocking to Raj and how much of a perfectionist is, the sloppy little scores they're giving away. I think it was two late tries, three late tries they gave away against the Japanese. But there's some guys who've really stepped forward now and kind of, like that Ireland team looks like a great team, looks like a solid team. He's pretty much gone with the same pack for the last three games because he announced the team there today, and not much change. And only Treadwell's in there now, and I think James Tracy's getting a chance as well. So good to see Devon Toner getting his 50th cap there as well, like at the weekend. So I think he'll be pretty happy, and he's just given a few guys in the back line little looks now. And I think
and the experience of pulling on that green jersey, it doesn't matter who you're playing against, that has value. But Bossy, who impressed you know in that blowout against Japan?
Yeah, to be honest, it's hard to find someone that didn't impress me. They're all like very good games. I was disappointed with the Japanese, as you said, but Jack Conan quite clearly is just you're swatting them off like flies. And some of those younger guys, what I do find is key for this tour is the fact that they're getting experience, they're feeling more and more comfortable in the green jersey. They're realizing that although it's a quicker paced game, they're well and truly up for it, so it gives them a good platform to be able to launch and put a bit more pressure on maybe some more season campaigners in the green jersey.
There's been some other interesting results around rugby the last couple of weeks. Scotland beat Australia, putting Michael Checa under serious pressure. He really needs to thump Italy now, who beat Fiji. South Africa are making French lives very miserable. I was away in France there and reading a lot of the rugby coverage.
Black flags on the
front
page.
They're not happy at all. And then we also had Francis Ailey moving on to Harlequins.
I think
people wish him well.
And it's just like he showed, like a lot of people said, he showed, you know, great talent the last few months, but I think every time he stepped out, like, he rarely had a poor game. Like he does have a lot of talent, and I think he'll do wonders over Harlequins, and people will be raving about him as well. And
Health is also a skill. Remember that, right? And then we also had the Six Nations finishing their investigation into the France versus Wales thing.
Sneaking that in. It snuck in there, didn't it?
We will link this to Peter O'Mahony, because at the time when Peter O'Mahony was coming into the Irish team, because Jamie Heaslip was out, the France-Wales game was still going on. So it was approaching the 100th minute. And the little bit of jiggery-pokery that was alleged to be going on by France, the Six Nations have said that France simply did not comply with the HIA protocol. You're very naughty boys, and they've been issued a letter of reprimand, but there is no clear evidence that there was any intent to obtain a competitive advantage. I will make no comment on that because the lawyer is staring at me. That's all I'll say. And Toulon threatened with administrative relegation to Pro D2. When Roger's back in, I can't wait to ask him about that.
Who's he always going on about? Breve? He's always taking pot shots at Breve. Yeah. Like, see what he thinks of Toulon when he's back in.
Exactly, yeah. I think we'll leave it there. Up next, Hayley O'Connor is in from Ladbrokes to give us odds for this weekend's first test.
The Hard Yards on Sports Joe, backed by Ladbrokes.
And we're back and we're joined by Hayley O'Connor from Ladbrokes. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
We're very well here. We have the first Lions test coming up this weekend. And what are Ladbrokes seeing as the odds for that game?
Well, New Zealand are currently 9-2 on, but they've actually been shorter. But we have seen the Lions actually shorten up for this test. I don't know whether it's because there's forecast for 2 days of rain, which will suit their style. And actually, ironically, the last time the All Blacks lost at Eden Park, wet, 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 were number one in the charts. So it's definitely going to be wet there on the weekend. But yeah, we are seeing the Lions come in for a bit of sport. I'm over in the UK at the moment, and I don't know what the media pickup is like about the team that's starting, but over here, like, they're saying things like, oh, you know, a shock team lining up. But it looks like, and I touched on this last week about the Lions been good in defence, but maybe needing to up the ante in attack. And it looks like Gatland has really picked a team that is very much an attacking side, with the likes of, you know, Elliot Daly starting, Liam Williams starting, both of them aggressive, and then the combative, you know, Peter O'Mahony being captain. So, yeah, the Lions, if you want to back them +5, you can have them at 13-8. But if you think New Zealand are absolutely going to walk all over us, New Zealand -20 is 9-4.
Okay. And the general over-under spread is 11 points for this game?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, one thing we've also been talking about is, I suppose, another one for Munster fans. While it's good that Peter O'Mahony is captain, hearts are swelling with pride. Might be a bit of sweat now because Razzy Erasmus, the reports are that he might be on his way. You're offering odds on whether he'll stay or go.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely think it's a question of when Razzy Erasmus will go, not if. So there's speculation that he's actually already triggered his 6-month clause, allowing him to leave a few months into the season, which will leave him appointed director of rugby in South Africa just ahead of the 2018 Southern Hemisphere season. So you can, if you can back Razzy Erasmus to leave by February 2018 at 1-12, which is unbelievably short, or if you think he'll still be at Munster come March around Cheltenham time, you can back him at 6-1.
Yeah, that sounds like someone knows that this 6-month clause has been triggered, all right, doesn't it? Speaking of Cheltenham and horses, you're at Ascot.
I am, yeah. Well, I'm not there. I've never ever thought I'd say this, but thankfully I'm not going to Ascot today. I'm going to Stratford, which is where our head office is. Because yesterday, I was there on Tuesday and Wednesday and going back on Friday, but it was 34 degrees yesterday and it was like people were nearly fighting to get into the shades. The heat was unbelievable and it was actually worse in the stand. So, but it was an amazing 2 days. We saw some phenomenal racing, and actually what really came to the fore was horses from America and South Africa running quite well because they're used to the heat. And one horse that I gave everybody on last week's podcast was Lady Aurelia. I said she was the bet of the week, and she had so far put in the performance of the week. She was absolutely phenomenal. So I hope all the listeners backed her at 4-1.
Yeah, so Pat, did you take that?
No, I'd say this is probably for
Pat later.
For the 18th time now, I've missed a dead cert bet now. So I have the pen and paper ready now if there's any more coming this week.
Yeah, any word on the colour?
Well, do you know who has? Somebody else who should have been given a tip was Ronan O'Gar, because yesterday I was like at the picnics, everyone's wearing their tops and tails, and I see this very Irish looking man running through all the picnics in car park too, and I was like, that looks terribly like Ronan O'Gar. He was running in trying to buy a shirt and a shirt and slacks, and I was like, it's Royal Ascot, like everybody knows. So he was in basically a short and t-shirt, so hopefully he had a good day and a lucky day and found a shirt that he could wear.
Well, hopefully he didn't lose his shirt and that's his
I'll send you a picture.
Yeah, we might draw a line under that one there. Excellent. Hayley O'Connor from Ladbrokes, thank you very much.
Cheers, Hayley.
Thanks a million. Bye.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks, Hayley, for taking the call. And thanks to Kev, to Isaac, Pat, to Fez, Joe Harrington for producing, and Paul Donegan was on sound. We'll be back next Thursday with a new podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud, and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. I'm Andy McGeady. Thanks for listening. This has been The Hard Yards. We'll talk to you next week.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes, passionate about sport.